My name is Michelle Ogle and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 12th of October 2009 and it's now 12:27 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you're from?
My name's Esselt Jones, and I'm 48 and a half and I'm from Felinheli, North Wales.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a bit hot at the moment.
Can you describe what you're wearing for me?
I am currently wearing a little number in red, glittery outfit that looks like a turkey.
So any particular reason you're wearing this costume?
It's going to keep me warm, and I thought, seeing I've got my slot at one, that it might as well be as ridiculous as possible because there's not going to be many people about, and I wanted to keep myself warm on the plane. So.
Where did you get it from?
Angels, who are a costumier for the theatrical and movie industry, but they've gone into hire at the moment as well, so I didn't make it myself.
Can you remember how you first heard about this project?
I heard from Artichoke, because I'd taken Kai, my little boy, and we'd gone to see the Spider in Liverpool. Because I'd missed the Elephant in London, and because I was on their mailing list, I heard about it that way, as well as I'd read about it in the papers, really. So I just blithely put my name on it, and lo and behold, the last month it came through. So.
Why did you want to apply?
I'm very interested in art, but I've never felt that I personally would be able to do any art really myself. So this was a way of sneaking into something without having to have thought of the concept and not having to paint or put anything in the studio really. So that's probably why, more than anything. And why not? When I was a student, I was nearly arrested by the special police group for swimming in the fountains one Saturday night with another Welsh girlfriend of mine, so I thought, well, it's just a step forward from that, really, isn't it? grow old disgracefully.
Is that your outlook?
Yes, I've already got my purple coat, so it won't be long. And well, nobody expects anything different from me. One of the people that are coming here tonight, it was the first time he ever saw me. I was in a college in Streatham. It was 1983, and I went into the class in a yellow rubber coat, and you're sort of, what the hell is this woman? Because I was in a sou'wester in the middle of southwest London, but I liked it because it was yellow.
Who's coming on to see you tonight?
My son, Kai, with my friends Lisa and Stefan, who live in Harrow, and they brought their daughter with them. And she's just started doing art as well, so she thinks this is totally ridiculous because she's starting to do the drawing and the shading, and then there's this. And my friend Joe and Nick have come up from Ramsgate. And Joe is the one that got me into the Artichoke thing, and I filled the form, got onto their newsletter, and I've ended up on the plinth, and not her. And she thinks that's hilarious.
What did you think of the Spider?
Spider's fantastic, absolutely brilliant. I loved it going in and out of the tunnels. I thought that was a great idea, that it was hatched in the tunnel and then crawled back in there. And I'd love to see the phones that they did between London and New York.
Electroscope.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. That sounded fantastic. That was a really good idea, that was. When you've got a 10-year-old, you want to try and show them as much as, you know, we went yesterday, saw the rabbit, we've been to see the Aztecs. A couple of months ago, I did a very strange thing. I managed to take them to see the bacon exhibition, which is not a really child-friendly thing, because it's quite ghastly in many ways. And then in the afternoon, we did the red stripe paintings, which... We took loads of little kids with us, and one of them was 6 years old, and we were in front of one of the grey paintings with a grey stripe through the middle. And
whose paintings?
forgot his name. That's what happens when you're 48. Come to me in a minute. You know, the red paintings. It'll come to me in a minute. And everybody was looking at it, nobody could see much in it at all, thinking it was a grey painting with a grey stripe in it. And we asked this little fella, this Irish little fella, what can you see? He says, I can see an angel. And we were like, and he was seriously looking at it and could see an angel. So.
What did your little boy make of the Bacon exhibition? Did he say anything?
Bacon, he was not disturbed by it, he's too young to understand really what was going on, but he found it an odd thing, and why were they paintings more so than the other stuff really. But I just like taking him to see as much things like that as I can really.
What was the Aztecs like?
Aztecs, well, the thing that I came away with that is it was during the 15 and 1600s. And we were sort of approaching Henry VIII, and they've got these amazingly beautifully carved stone buckets to put gouged human hearts in. So it's quite amazing, really, the difference of what was going on at this, you know, in two sides of the world, really. And then, you know, when Cortez went over there and discovered them, virtually wiped them out because we took our diseases and stuff across like we have done everywhere else. But beautiful stuff, amazing. You know, on the one side you've got these very primitive, murderous folk, and then this beautiful jewellery and the turquoise they use, amazing. So it's worth going to see.
What would you be doing if you weren't here?
We'd be home in Wales. I'd have missed a weekend of play. I'd probably be doing my ironing, getting him ready for school when he'd be asleep. I'd be catching up with my Sky Plus, so it's much more fun. So, yeah.
Tell me a bit more about what you do for a living.
Me? I don't do anything for a living. I was retired I've got a dodgy heart. And so I've been retired since 2003, which is quite peculiar because I'm relatively young to be not working when all your friends are working. And because of what happened, because I was working in London at the time, and then because of that, I decided to move back to Wales because it was more appropriate really to bring up my little fella, and it was, you know, more peaceful and less rushing around, because as soon as you get off the train, your speed has to increase. So. I used to do facilities management for a charity, for RNIB, so I used to have like three buildings across London that I used to be in charge of all the sort of setup and staff and contracts. And now my principal role is looking after a 10-year-old boy, so it's quite different, but better for me.
Can you tell me a bit more about how that actually happened, how you found out you had a heart condition?
Oh, you don't know that. Oh, how did it happen? Nobody really knows how it happened. I have had open heart surgery when I was in my teens, and some of the specialists have said it may be to do with that, but others have said not, because nearly admitting that it could have caused another problem isn't a good thing for future people having the open heart surgery. So I don't know. So who knows where it comes from? But in the week that I was admitted to, I didn't think I was that ill. I was expecting them to check me out. I was just feeling dizzy and tired and stuff. They admitted me in straight away. And I was in for about 3 weeks while they were trying to work out what was wrong with me. And my mother, who lived with me, she died in the time I was in the hospital. So she was in the morgue while I was in the hospital. And yeah, so. And not a good time really, but it's just one of those things, you know, at least I know what I'm going to die of, that's how I feel, but it doesn't really matter what I mean. So, yeah.
And how do you spend your time now that you aren't?
At home. I'm the chairman of the governors of the school. I'm Sunday school teacher. I run a project for elderly folk where I'm collecting digital stories of their lives. So they, this, the sort of idea behind it, they bring about half a dozen to a dozen pictures of a certain one time in their lives, not the whole caboosh. We aim to do them in 2 to 3 minutes, and it could be one old lady, she was telling us when they were kids, they'd go on the back of the coal cart, you know, the horse pulling the cart around the village to go to be taken to school and stuff like that, and buildings that don't exist in the village anymore, they talk about those and show the pictures of it, so that it's really good. And we're now trying to get the school kids to get involved as well, so that we get the interaction between the elderly and the young. So that's been quite good. And we've collected photographs of kids in the local primary school, of which there have now been three, from 1897 to the present day, and we're trying to identify as many of them as we can, so that there's sort of this huge record of people similar to this in a peculiar way.
What's it? Can you tell me more about the place where you live? What's it like?
Felinheli. It's called Felinheli in Welsh. Felin is mill, heli is salt. So they reckon there was a salt mill there a long, long time ago. It was then turned and called Port de Norwich, because the Ashton Smiths, who are an English family, moved to the area and they owned Llanberis Slate Quarry. Llanberis Slate Quarry was the largest producing slate quarry in the world in its time. And the Ashton Smiths were obviously very rich on the back of it. And then the port of De Norwich was called that because all the slate used to come down on the incline. And an incline was a brilliant system that they filled the slates, and they were coming down the hill from Llanberis, because Llanberis is obviously in the mountains, and we're right on the shores of the Menai Straits. So they'd come down by the weight of gravity, and then they'd pull the empty ones up the other side. So there was like this continuous chain of slate coming down from Llanberis. So it was the port of De Norwich, which is why. But we've now gone back to Felinheli because it's not a very PC thing to be, because it's very much an English gentry thing that took over the village, and everybody was working there, and there were, not very good conditions. And but the village, I live in one of the cottages of one of the the workers. So it's an 1880 slate stone cottage, and it's very beautiful in this day and age, but at that time it was just what they could throw up very quickly. And yeah, it's got fantastic slate mantelpieces and fireplaces, which everybody's like, whoa, but then it didn't cost them anything, did it? It came from this quarry. So it's very beautiful, and we're right on the Menai Straits and look over to Anglesey. On the other side, so you've got the two bridges, the Telford bridges, and going across. So yeah, it's a very, very beautiful part of the world.
Tell me a little bit more about your history project that you've been running.
My history project at home.
Did you instigate that?
Yes, we did. We had a cafe in the village. The village, on the back of all that, was a very busy, prosperous village, and used to have 80 shops in the village. There's one shop now, and because everybody goes to Sainsbury's, not that Sainsbury's come anywhere near us, the nearest thing we've got is Tesco's now. But we had a cafe, and the cafe closed, and now there's nowhere for anybody to meet, really, except for the shop, unless they go to a community meeting in the community hall and stuff. So we decided that we'd try and raise the money to pay the rent of the cafe. So I have the Thursday, which I focus on elderly folk. There's a Friday where the local councillor speaks to, it's just open clinic, so anybody can drop in and have a moan and a groan, usually. this a Welsh learners class on the Saturday. Wine tasting has just started this week, which I missed. We're just trying to make it a focus for people to, if they don't want to be at home, they can go to. And probably what I haven't mentioned at all is that Welsh is my first language. So the village where we live, 80% of people are Welsh, and the schools are all Welsh. And if a child, like my son, he was born and bred in Harrow, and went to school at Marylebone High Street, but when we went back home, he had to deal with Welsh straight away, and with no teaching English at all, no formal teaching of English till they're 8.
How did he respond to that?
Well, the whole thing was quite disturbing for him, I suppose, really, but I mean, his Welsh is better than my Welsh in many ways now, because my Welsh in the 80s, when I left home, Welsh wasn't as sexy as it is now, in the same way as Irish wasn't, you know, none of the Celtic languages were. And since I left, S4C was established, and that's had a massive impact on the whole sort of Welsh structure of everything, really, and the language. And then there was things like computers didn't exist when I was at school, and there's all that language in Welsh now that I didn't know anything about when I came back, and then what the hell they were talking about. Because I'd use the English terms, because they didn't exist. We had one computer at school. That's quite a change, really. It's amazing. He's been back. Oh, I was paid extra because I could work a word processor when I started working. It sounds like something out of the olden times. So, yeah.
Have a lot of people stayed in the village, even though the quarry is...
My family's... 5 or 6 generations in the village. My father was a GP in the village, his father was a GP in the village before him, her father was the drugstore owner. And there are a lot of families that are like that, but because Bangor, which I think is one of the smaller cities in the UK, has a BBC, BBC studios, BBC Wales. So, and we've got S4C, and there's lots of small production companies as well, although the funding for them are disappearing like everybody else. So there's lots of TV folk in the village, because it's quite a smart village, because we've got these amazing views of, you know, and they are quite stunning. So people, it's a place to go. So whereas if you went to Carnarvon, which has got, you know, one of the best examples of Edward the First castles going, very cheap to live, come to Berlin and you'd pay 20% more for the same thing. So it's quite a busy village in many ways. And yeah. Quite interesting, really.
Tell me a little bit more about how you're going to spend your time on the plinth. What are you going to do?
Well, I want to take some photos. I want to take my time up there to just appreciate the fact that I'm up there looking down. So I want to take some photos all around and my friends from there down. I've chosen some music related to people who have supported me and people who are here tonight to jig along to. I generally just want to have fun, really. Just sit. Hopefully that I don't get cold, and hopefully an hour isn't that long. But I think this outfit's going to keep me warm. I don't think I'll be wearing it very often, though. It's not the sort of, you know, sort of outfits you probably would wear more often.
What did your little boy say when you told him you were going
to
do this?
He wasn't surprised. I mean, his cousins have got a song about their crazy auntie, so nobody's surprised, really, that A, I've done it, and B, that I've chosen to do something stupid, really. So, not that I'm an exhibitionist or anything, no.
How would you describe yourself?
Me? I don't know, really. I just get on with people and get on with life, really. Have fun, make the most of it, because you never know. I think that's, you know, I've had that lesson since I was 16, so it does make it, just make you look at life slightly different. And you look back and you know that, you know, that's, because that's what I was going to do as my first thing, really. It was the important people that have affected me through my life and how I've got here. And then I thought, what if it's windy and what if it's raining, and trying to get food, it wouldn't be easy to do that, really, because I saw one lady and she struggled dreadfully, and I thought, oh God. On the night before I had my first operation, which was quite a big operation, and it was in the 70s, so they hadn't been doing them themselves for very long either. I read the back of my novel, so I knew what happened in my novel in case I didn't wake up the next day to find out. And that's at the age of 16, so I think, you know, and a pinch, really.
You looking forward to going up on that plinth now?
I've forgotten I'm going on there now. What plinth? Probably, yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, thank you for looking after me, and thank you for the opportunity, really. I was just saying to the chap, it's been really surprising, because I've taken more notice of it, obviously, since my I'm in the pool of people that's going to come up here. And really surprised us that, as it's gone on, how many more people are applying to be on it, and I suppose that's because there's more publicity and stuff as well, but you know, there's over 33, nearly 33,500 now, isn't there? Whereas when my name first came up, I think it was only about 27,000 that had applied. But there's a boy from my village who's been on it as well. Gwilym Hughes, he was one of the youngest, 16-year-old. Yeah, his dad came with them, and he did. He had his mobile phone number up, and people rang him, and he had a megaphone, and he transported their messages across the square. So he had an afternoon slot, though. So I'm not the only one in the village.
Not the only plinth in the
But
village.
I am the only turkey.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Michelle.